This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
U.S. to export vaccines. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Tuesday, May 18th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The Biden administration anticipates that 80 million COVID vaccine doses are expected to be donated to struggling countries by the end of June.
More states are embracing the new guidance regarding masks from the CDC, but at least one retailer jumped the gun in California.
President Biden says he supports a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas as the two sides continue trading fire. We'll have the latest.
And the reasons community college has suddenly become unaffordable for a growing number of Americans.
You know, one is that certainly tuition has gone up, and that has to do with the state funding part, right? So it used to be that the government subsidized a lot of tuition, you know, sort of high levels of tuition, which meant students and families paid less. That dynamic has definitely fallen off.
Jillian Berman at MarketWatch on a study that finds just 41% of community colleges are affordable. President Biden has expressed his support for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas during a call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It came after more than two dozen Democratic senators issued a joint statement earlier yesterday that urged a ceasefire. A White House statement following the call between the two leaders fell short of an explicit demand to end the fighting. White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki.
Our focus, our goal, every single action we take, every statement we make is with the objective of reducing the violence and bringing an end to the conflict on the ground.
Meanwhile, Israel said airstrikes in the Gaza Strip targeted a tunnel network used by the terrorist group Hamas amid rising civilian casualties in the conflict. The Israeli military said assaults with warplanes hit roughly 60 miles of underground passageways that it says are used to ferry weapons and fighters across Gaza. The Gaza Health Ministry says at least 200 Palestinians have been killed in a week of airstrikes. 10 people have been killed in Israel in rocket attacks launched from Gaza towards civilian areas. The Biden administration wants to pick up the pace of COVID-19 vaccine shipments to other countries. The U.S. now plans to share globally 20 million doses of vaccines produced by Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson, all of which are being used in the U.S. President Biden said yesterday that 80 million vaccine doses are expected to be donated by the end of June.
Beating this pandemic globally is beyond the capacity of any one nation, even the United States. But the United States will continue to donate our excess supply as that supply is delivered to us, but that won't be nearly enough.
Mr. Biden said that the 80 million doses would be far more than any other nation has donated to date, drawing a distinction with vaccines that were sold by other countries. An earlier pledge, by the way, to export 60 million doses of the vaccine from AstraZeneca came with little sacrifice because that vaccine has yet to be authorized in the U.S. New York State is dropping requirements for face masks this week in most public spaces for people vaccinated against COVID, confirming with the latest guidance from the CDC. Governor Andrew Cuomo said yesterday that New York will still order public transportation riders to wear face coverings and mandate them in schools and some other communal settings.
By the CDC guidance, immunocompromised people, unvaccinated people should continue to wear a mask and social distance. But if you are vaccinated, you are safe. No masks, no social distancing.
Elsewhere, the public health director for Los Angeles County says they've been contacting retail chains to emphasize that existing rules that require everyone to wear masks indoors in a store remain in effect in California. That developed after the Trader Joe's in South Pasadena posted a sign in front of its store that gave permission for vaccinated shoppers to enter its market without a mask, a policy that violates California orders. Coming up next, movement on an infrastructure bill. It's Small Business Month, and Dell Technologies and Windows are celebrating your unstoppable drive. Save up to 45% on powerful PCs with Windows 10 Pro to work from anywhere. Plus top monitors and docks for the ultimate business setup, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right business tech, server, storage, and cloud solutions at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL for Small Business Month savings. As a business owner, you eventually realize you can't do everything yourself, but hiring is complicated. And what if you only need part-time help? Belay, an innovative staffing solution, has successfully matched thousands of businesses with part-time virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and social media strategists. Belay offers you a virtual support team that can transform your workday. Let Belay help you juggle less and accomplish more. Just go to Belay, B-E-L-A-Y, solutions.com/deal. That's BelaySolutions.com/deal.
Glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. West Virginia Senator Shelley Moore Capito is playing a key role as a potential deal maker in Republican talks with the White House over a potential infrastructure spending bill. Republicans say they're preparing to deliver their counteroffer, possibly today. The initial proposal was for $568 billion, but Bloomberg says the price tag could rise. The White House, as you may know, wants to spend more than $2 trillion and has given leniency to what qualifies as infrastructure. Insight from Christina Peterson, congressional reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Christina, what are you hearing?
Well, Senator Capito is a longtime behind-the-scenes legislator. She's very well-liked, well-respected among both sides of the aisle. But this is really the first time we're seeing her take a very public role as the lead negotiator. And in some ways, it's a very common-sense issue for her to be taking this lead on, because she is the top Republican on the Environment and Public Works Committee, which deals with many of the infrastructure issues that are coming up in these talks. So, for instance, her committee is the one that does the highway bill. And that's, of course, what Republicans are hoping to focus this infrastructure bill on, sort of those traditional elements of infrastructure, roads, bridges, highways, transit. And in addition, an issue that's been a longtime priority of Senator Capito's, which is broadband internet access and increasing that access, particularly in rural areas. You know, it's also just, she is a fresh face to be taking one of these more visible roles with the new administration. And there are a lot of challenges that lay in her path. So people think that she is a good fit for this. And at the same time, I think there is some skepticism that they will be able to reach a deal, just given how far apart the two sides are.
Okay. So you referenced that she met recently with President Biden, along with a handful of other Republicans. There seemed to be an indication that Ms. Capito and Mr. Biden have a decent relationship?
Yes, by all means. I mean, I think they're both in the very amiable, chatty, good-natured kind of school of politics. She said that their meetings have been very productive. She thought that his request last week to try and add some more details and flesh out their first $568 billion proposal was reasonable. That's what they are working on now. They've said they hope to have a more detailed proposal for soon, sometime this week potentially. But, you know, there are just some big structural differences at play here.
So West Virginia plays an interesting role here. Not only is she the lead Republican on the Environment and Public Works Committee, but her colleague, Democrat Joe Manchin, seems to be a key player in everything proposed in the Senate these days.
Absolutely. I mean, Democrats have 50 members of the Democratic caucus in the Senate, so they cannot afford to lose a single Democrat. And Senator Manchin is arguably the most centrist Democrat and one of the most outspoken about his views. So he is often in the middle of every big legislative fight, and infrastructure is likely to be no different. He's already made clear that he really wants to see a bipartisan deal here. He doesn't want to see Democrats force something through just on party lines, which is how the first COVID relief package passed earlier this year. So he's really important, and he and Senator Capito have a very good relationship by all accounts. I mean, it's always complicated when you have two senators of different parties or even from the same party in every state. You know, there's sometimes a little rivalry. You know, it's a complex relationship, but the two of them appear to get along very well. They have driven back to West Virginia from D.C. together. They toured the state together with Brad Paisley in 2016. He was funny. I think he would prefer that Senator Capito drive next time. Senator Manchin can be a little bit of a fearless driver. But people think that, you know, in the, if this gets to sort of the final stages, the fact that Senator Capito and Senator Manchin know each other so well is likely to help any sort of last-minute negotiations. As you recall, when they passed that COVID package, concerns from Senator Manchin kind of brought everything to a standstill for about 12 hours on the final day of negotiations. Mm-hmm. So they are anticipating that if anything similar happens, she will be in a good position to help work out any last-minute concerns.
And she'll be in an even bigger role, as you point out, if Democrats can't unify in the Senate over something like this.
That's right. So if Democrats can't find 50 votes among their own ranks, that means that they're going to have to try and do something bipartisan, in which case they would need at least 10 Republican votes. And that's where Republicans really think that they would get some real leverage. You know, if Democrats can work out a deal amongst themselves, that's everything that they want. They may, there isn't as much enticement to go and try and work out something with Republicans.
Thanks, Christina. Christina Peterson, congressional reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Biden expressed support for a ceasefire between Israel and Gaza's militant Hamas rulers in a call to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but he stopped short of demanding an immediate stop to the 8 days of Israeli airstrikes and Hamas rocket barrages that have killed more than 200 people, most of them Palestinian. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
Play the role we can play in the most constructive way possible to bring, to reduce the violence, to de-escalate the situation on the ground. And a great deal of that is going to be through intensive, quiet diplomacy behind the scenes.
Number two.
The Biden administration has agreed to let about 250 people a day through border crossings with Mexico to seek refuge in the U.S., part of negotiations to settle a lawsuit over pandemic-related powers that deny migrants the right to apply for asylum. The Trump administration let the CDC effectively end asylum at the border while it sought to prevent the coronavirus from spreading.
Number three.
Thunderstorms and flash flooding have slammed the Gulf Coast. The National Weather Service issued a flash flood emergency in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Some areas reported up to 12 inches of rain. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
We've got vehicles parked in the middle of the roadway. We've got a whole lot of victims that need to be saved.
Tornado warnings have been issued in various cities. President Biden has restored a longstanding presidential tradition by releasing his tax returns, showing that 26% of the first couple's income went to the federal government in 2020, while the average federal income tax rate is just over 14%. Biden and his wife Jill, a teacher, earned $607,336 last year. They donated about $30,700 to charity. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine's $5 million lottery to encourage vaccinations appears to be an early win. More than 25,400 COVID vaccine shots were administered Friday, 2 days after the program was announced, making it the highest vaccination day in 3 weeks. State Lottery Director Pat McDonald says there are also opportunities for college scholarships.
Our youth ages 12 to 17 will have a chance to win a four-year full ride scholarship, including room and board, tuition, and books to any Ohio State college or university.
Vaccinations for residents aged 30 to 74 spiked by 6% after weeks of steady decline.
We like stuff, apparently.
Yes, I'd say so.
Coming up next, the cheapest colleges getting less affordable. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness? We're all dealing with a lot right now. I'm sure you feel the same kind of added stress I do. Then you should know about BetterHelp. BetterHelp isn't a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Start communicating in under 48 hours. Schedule weekly or monthly phone or video sessions or whatever works for you. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. That's why there's a special offer for This Morning with Gordon Deal listeners. 10% off your first month. Visit BetterHelp.com/Gordon. That's better, HELP.com/Gordon. And join the over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. That's 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Gordon. Thanks for joining us. It's getting tougher and tougher to afford a post-secondary education. MarketWatch reporter Jillian Berman says even when students attend the cheapest college available to them and work, they can still struggle to afford to pay for school and live. Jillian, explain.
Yeah, so over the past several years, we've seen, you know, the states have really pulled back on investing in their public colleges, which means that even the most affordable, or what we think of anyway, as the most affordable option for college, community college, has in some cases become too expensive for low-income students.
Is that because tuition has gone up or available aid has shrunk?
Yeah, so it's a mix. You know, one is that certainly tuition has gone up, and that has to do with the state funding part, right? So it used to be that the government subsidized a lot of tuition, you know, sort of high levels of tuition, which meant students and families paid less. That dynamic has definitely fallen off. But in addition to, you know, the aid that the federal government in particular gives to college students has also sort of like lost its earning power. So the Pell Grant, which is the grant that the government gives to low-income students to pay for college, you know, sort of decades ago used to pay for a much larger percentage of college costs than what it does today.
Mm. Explain the example of that woman you talked to, that Ciara Harris from Michigan, what she went through.
Yeah, so she, you know, she's particularly in her first year of community college, she worked. She had, you know, she was working, she said 40 to 60 hour weeks at a diner. She did all sorts of jobs there. And she had her tuition at her community college was covered through grants and scholarships. But even so, you know, she had to work to afford basically to live. You know, it's just because you go to college doesn't mean that your rent or your food bill stop. So, you know, she really had to work to make it all work for her.
Mm. We're speaking with Jillian Berman, reporter at MarketWatch. She's got a good story entitled Over 50% of Community Colleges Are Not Affordable for Low-Income Students. Does this change at all, say, as we emerge further from the pandemic?
So that's a good question. It's hard to say. You know, community colleges and community college students really, you know, sort of suffered a lot during the pandemic. Enrollment in community college dropped a lot just, you know, because students, you know, sometimes they had to take on more, you know, care responsibilities for children who were suddenly home. You know, they had to take on jobs. Obviously, you know, they may have lost a loved one or a loved one was sick. So the pandemic has really been, you know, sort of a tough time for community colleges and their students. Whether it becomes more affordable after the pandemic, you know, it's hard to say.
Thanks, Jillian. Jillian Berman, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now, there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon.
The news without the nonsense. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday, May 18. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. President Biden supports a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. U.S. increasing its COVID vaccine donations overseas. 2 months after Texas said businesses could operate at full capacity, something President Biden called Neanderthal thinking. The state reported no deaths from COVID on Sunday. Trainer Bob Baffert banned from entering horses at New York racetracks, including Belmont Park. NBA starts its play-in tournament today, and the bizarre diet of a 111-year-old Australian man. That story in about 20 minutes. Hey, thanks for being with us. One parent insists their teenager get vaccinated against COVID-19, but their ex is staunchly against it. what happens next. If each parent has some portion of physical custody and decision-making power in a child's life, who gets to decide whether the child should be vaccinated? In-depth legal analysis from Dallas family law attorney Jennifer Hargrave. Jennifer, take us through this.
Certainly, the right to consent to a vaccine does raise questions. And you can imagine that people who are now exes, who are not living together under the same roof, commonly share very opposite opinions on issues such as vaccines. And so it does raise a question. And, you know, there's not a lot of clear-cut answers to how this will be dealt with by the courts when parents do have a disagreement as to the vaccine. But, you know, when we look at a vaccine, we're talking about something that's breaking the skin. And, you know, from what I understand, I'm not a medical doctor, but that is what constitutes an invasive procedure is, you know, the vaccine. So that raises all kinds of questions.
Jeez. You could speak to this probably, but how much of this is divorced couples doing this just because they don't like each other, taking opposite sides versus perhaps just politics?
Right. Well, that might require a psychology degree, which I don't have, to unpack all of that. But certainly, you know, it isn't uncommon that we see parents who have very different ideas about how to raise their children, right? We've seen that all through the pandemic, where you have one parent who's ultra cautious and careful about everything, and the other parent who's, you know, taking the kids on vacations and putting them on airplanes. And so it's not uncommon that we just have very, very differing ideas. And, you know, what I think is a surprise to a lot of people is that there's not like a right answer a lot of times. These are discretionary matters that as a parent you get to decide. And so sometimes for a lot of families it's just coming to terms with the fact that we do parent in different ways, that there are good things about the fact that we parent in different ways, but it can be hard for them to see that. But I like to usually try and remind them, if that's possible, that, you know, you need the risk taker parent and you need the cautious parent. And hopefully, you know, the child thrives with both.
I would imagine. I mean, I know it has come up now given the COVID vaccine, but these types of disputes probably happen with other vaccines. Not everybody favors vaccines.
Absolutely. I mean, I have gone to trial over the issue of vaccines. So, you know, the unfortunate thing is that, you know, really the best case scenario is that the parents themselves can reach an agreement, sure. Right? Even if they don't see eye to eye on everything, that at least they can have a common ground on what's going to be best for the children. But of course, if that isn't the case, then, you know, we have a tiebreaker system. You can go plead your case in front of a third party who may or may not share your values. Who's not going to have a whole lot of time to listen to it, but you can put those decisions in front of the judge. And, you know, for the most part, our judges do a really good job of trying to listen and understand the parents, but they typically don't want to be the decision maker in that either. You know, I mean, they made decisions for their children about whether they're going to be vaccinated or not. So it's a conundrum for a lot of people. And we try and help families stay out of the courtroom as much as possible, just because, you know, on an issue like this, you will have a winner, you will have a loser.
Yeah.
That usually doesn't bode well for future co-parenting relationships.
Mm. We're speaking with Jennifer Hargrave, family law attorney based in Dallas. She's the founder of Hargrave Family Law. We're talking about when divorced couples disagree on kids' vaccines. So when a judge is asked to decide, what factors might he or she consider? Like past...
I mean, certainly they can hear expert testimony. You could have experts come in and talk about the efficacy of the vaccines. A lot of times people, you know, come in with unscientifically backed, you know, reasons for their opinions. That's okay. You get to have opinions. You don't have to justify it. But a court's going to want to hear the science and hear the evidence. You know, I think a court's going to take into consideration whether at one time there was an agreement by the parents to vaccine or not vaccine.
Yeah.
You know, vaccinations are something that generally are considered to be in the best interest of the public. So the judge is going to weigh that in through the consideration as well.
It's Dallas family law attorney Jennifer Hargrave. Coming up next, the lottery numbers that were very lucky, if not raising eyebrows.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Hey, glad you're with us, and welcome into Tuesday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it's been nearly two decades since the dawn of the selfie, but it still doesn't appear we've learned any lessons about when might not be a good time to try to snap a pic. One California bicyclist got a tough lesson in this yesterday on national TV. A reporter for MSNBC was doing a live shot on the beach in Santa Monica, talking about the CDC mask guidelines when someone on a bike rides into the background of the shot, holding the handlebars steady or somewhat steady with one hand and attempting to take a selfie with the other. The rider then promptly loses balance and unsuccessfully tries to stick out their right leg to stop from falling, only to eventually crumble into a heap in full view of the audience. Thankfully, the only thing seriously bruised was the rider's ego, as they were apparently able to recover and ride off after taking that selfie spill.
Mm.
Bad timing on that one.
Yeah. I didn't realize it's been nearly two decades, as you said, since the selfie began.
So I had to look this up because I wanted to know how long it's been since we started with the selfie. And it's apparently the first reference to it, according to the internet, was sometime around 2002 in Australia. I guess there was a website that was dedicated to selfies, to people taking pictures of themselves with their cell phones. We didn't even have the smartphones at the time.
Yeah.
We had the picture phones, I guess, as we called them back then, right? The flip phones that would take your picture.
Yeah.
And those were the first selfies. But I want to say 10 to 15 years we've been talking about it here. I want to say somewhere in that 10 to 15 year range is when the U.S. sort of came to our shores from Australia.
Got it. I always find it interesting, too, to profile the selfie takers.
Yeah.
Right? If you look on somebody's Instagram and they're only pictures of themselves.
Right.
Not selfies with, say, groups of people.
Right.
What does that say about a person?
Oh, yeah.
You're an egomaniac. You seek attention lots of the time. Like when your Instagram is just flooded with photos of you.
Yes. You could do whole psychological profiles on those folks, or the people who change like their profile pic on Facebook or Instagram every single day to some new selfie of themselves that they've taken, just rotate them every day so that people can then comment again
how beautiful
they look, and that's an amazing picture of you and how stunning you are.
That's right.
Yes, we definitely need to study these
ego
folks.
Stroking.
Yes. Yeah. And it probably shouldn't shock us to know the numbers 666, thought to be cursed or a sign of the devil by many, are actually considered lucky numbers to some, and they turned out to be very lucky for nearly 8,000 lottery players in North Carolina. Officials say that 666 came up in a pick three drawing last week, causing 7,998 tickets to win a total of $3.2 million in prizes. Top prizes range from $250 to $500. Lottery officials said triple-digit combinations known as trips are common choices for pick three players.
I don't doubt that either.
The 666 was a little surprising because that's considered again unlucky to a lot of people. They maybe want to stay away from that when you're putting down money to try and win a big prize.
I would be pretty sure that if you had said if the number 666 came up on 666 tickets worth $6.66 million. Pretty sure the world would be ending this weekend.
Yeah, we need to go hide under the desks if that happens.
And if you play those numbers and win,
yeah,
have you sold your soul?
Yeah, most likely.
Right.
Yeah, you can confirm that for sure.
666 popularized by Iron Maiden, by the way, back in the day. It's Small Business Month, and Dell Technologies and Windows are celebrating your unstoppable drive. Save up to 45% on powerful PCs with Windows 10 Pro to work from anywhere, plus top monitors and docks for the ultimate business setup, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right business tech, server, storage, and cloud solutions at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL for Small Business Month savings. Thanks for spending time with us. Sure, exercise helps your muscles, your brain, and your lifespan, but according to a new study published in the Journal of Behavioral Medicine, working out more every day can also enhance your feelings of purpose in life. And science shows that living a more purposeful and meaningful life is also a happier and longer one. EatThis.com wrote about the study, reporting the researchers found that exercise is not only linked with stronger feelings of purpose, but it creates a virtuous cycle as those feelings of purpose then propel people to exercise more. It found that exercising earlier in life was linked with a greater sense of purpose in people's later years. According to data compiled by the University of Minnesota, having a stronger sense of purpose is linked to a longer life, a lower risk of heart disease, better protection against Alzheimer's, and even better pain management. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The U.S. will send at least 80 million doses of coronavirus vaccines to other countries by the end of June. President Biden says 20 million doses are from Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. 60 million are from AstraZeneca.
We're going to bring the same whole-of-government response to the global effort that made us so successful here at home.
The announcements come as the U.S. and other developed nations face increasing criticism for monopolizing vaccines while the developing world struggles.
Number two.
Mask mandates continue to vary state by state and store by store. In New York, vaccinated people will no longer need to wear masks indoors or outdoors. Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Effective this Wednesday, we're going to adopt the CDC's new guidance and regulations on masks and social distancing for vaccinated people.
The New York Marathon will return this fall with 33,000 runners. Meanwhile, fully vaccinated Californians will have to wear face coverings in most indoor settings for at least another month.
Number three.
In agreeing to hear a potentially groundbreaking abortion case, the Supreme Court has energized activists on both sides of the long-running debate who are trying to make abortion access a major issue in next year's midterm elections. The justices will take up a Mississippi law banning abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy this fall. The Treasury Department and IRS will begin sending monthly payments of $250 or $300 to low and moderate income families under the newly expanded child tax credit starting July 15th. The payments will continue on a monthly basis through December. Former Seminole County, Florida tax collector Joel Greenberg has pleaded guilty in federal court to a variety of misdeeds, including admitting to having sex with a minor. Greenberg has implicated Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz as also having sex with a 17-year-old girl. In the plea agreement, Greenberg committed to cooperating with authorities, investigating other crimes of which he might have knowledge, including sex trafficking. After calling basketball and other major sports for nearly 60 years, Marv Albert is hanging up his headset. Albert, who has broadcast Knicks, Rangers, and NBA games since the 60s, will retire after calling the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver calls Albert's voice the soundtrack for basketball fans for decades.
That's a fair assessment. Thank you, Jen. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. Thanks for being with us. Australia's oldest ever man is sharing his secrets to reaching more than 111. Among them, eating chicken brains. Retired cattle rancher Dexter Kruger yesterday became Australia's oldest man. He told Australian Broadcasting from his nursing home in rural Queensland that the weekly poultry delicacy had contributed to his longevity. He explained that chickens have a head, and in there, there's a brain, and they're delicious little things. And he describes there's only one little bite. It's not his only dietary secret, by the way. Earlier this year, he told a news outlet that eating 6 prawns every day was also part of his routine. Mr. Kruger's 74-year-old son, Greg, credits his father's simple outback lifestyle for his long life. Mr. Kruger loves to write, has authored 12 books, and is currently working on his autobiography. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.